Hello, everybody. I'm Scott.
And I'm Julie.
Hello, Julie.
And hello, Scott.
Is it snowing where you are?
Oh, no. Gosh, it was in the 90s over the weekend.
Well, good. I'm glad.
And it's snowing where you
are? It's not snowing, but it's threatening.
That's crazy.
This is a little bit late. Yeah. And, okay. And happy Easter, by the way. Happy Easter.
Oh, happy Easter.
Mm-hmm.
We made it again.
We did.
How did you do on Lent?
I did okay. Not as well as I could have, but isn't that always the way?
Yeah, I guess so. It's funny because I did great at the stuff I added on, which usually that falls by the wayside so early.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very enriching. However, I did horrible at the stuff I gave up, and it's the first year I've ever not been just ironclad.
Uh-huh.
But I just couldn't, it's terrible to say this, but I just couldn't care somehow.
Uh-huh.
I go, okay, well, I came close enough. And I'm just like, oh, I can't tell if I'm just being horrible or God, is this you? Hey, let it be you. And then I'd try again.
Uh-huh.
Not very hard, though. So right. I don't know.
Gotcha. All right. Oh, well. Well, we're here today to do good story number 9.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about a book by Charles DeLint called The Mystery of Grace.
Yes, and he is not Catholic. Oh, and we are here to look for the one reality or reflect on what we see of the one reality as Catholics that we see underlying this story.
That is right. That is why we're here.
A regular story.
Yep.
Although it's infused with all kinds of things about faith and belief from an urban fantasy point of view.
Right. And that's what I'd call this book. If I was going to put it in a genre, it would be urban fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the first Charles DeLint book I've read that I remember.
Okay.
I know I've come across him several times.
Have you?
Yeah, yeah. You know, he's got a lot of books.
Yes, and I think I started reading him back in the beginning. I'm looking at his Wikipedia page because I remember I read The Riddle of the Wren, Moonheart. Those were 1984.
Uh-huh.
He had a gypsy story. He had a couple of fun ones about kind of like a modern day Jack the Giant Killer kind of story. And about, I would say, the late, probably 1990. Was the second of the Jack the Giant Killers. And then he kind of went into this series of stories where he settled it down in one Canadian town. And I didn't really care for those. So I just had quit reading him. And then I saw this at the bookstore. And with a name like The Mystery of Grace, as I believe I mentioned in the last show, it's impossible for me not to go, what? So yes. I just took a flyer on it. And it's a little interesting from some of those other stories. He's always kind of specialized in urban fantasy and the kind of thing where there are two simultaneous worlds where most of them have been set in Canada. And so people would somehow, like, you know, you have a head accident or something or head injury. And so you suddenly can see that there are also the Manitou and the elves and things that are existing with us.
I see.
And this is a different kind of seeing into a different reality.
Yeah. And there is two different places in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And the grace of the title is Alta Gracia Grace Quintero is the name of her. Yeah. So she's the main character in this book.
Yeah. She is a unique person. She, obviously Hispanic. She works at Sanchez Motor Works customizing hot rods, and she's got all kinds of ink, which is the word for tattoos, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I'm clueless. And then, you know, she just lives in her little world and she's kind of a loner.
Yeah, kind of a loner. She doesn't have a lot of friends, but the friends she has are all down at the place she works, the Sanchez Motor Works.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, she doesn't have a lot of family around her. In fact, I don't think she has any after a little while into the book. Shortly after the beginning.
Right. Her grandfather dies at the beginning, and she was very close to him, which is how she got into hot rods and, I guess, rockabilly, which goes along with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Apparently, hand in hand.
Yep. And music is a big part of the book.
Yeah, and it's told from two points of view. So we have Alta Gracia, who's really just called Grace.
Mm-hmm.
And then, although you remember the Alta Gracia because her first tattoo was of Our Lady of Alta Gracia, who I'd never heard of, but is an actual saint, mm-hmm. or a manifestation of Our Lady, which would be the Virgin Mary.
Right.
And then the other person is, I guess, kind of a modern day version of her in a sense, is, I mean, technologically updated in a way. John.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's an artist who does artwork for his friends who have a computer gaming company, game development company. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. And I'd like to mention that I listened to this on audio, and the audio was absolutely terrific. It was from Blackstone Audio, read by Paul Michael Garcia and Ty Simmons. So the book is written from these two points of view, from John and Grace, and it alternates between them. And as they alternate, if it's from the point of view of John, it's read by Paul Michael Garcia. And if it's from the point of view of Grace, it's from Ty Simmons, who really cemented herself as one of my favorite narrators in this book.
Yes.
So she did a terrific, terrific job.
Between this and The Reapers Are the Angels, which she read. I mean, she's just wonderful. And I'd never heard of Paul Michael Garcia. Not that I listened to as many audiobooks as you, but he was great.
Yeah, he was. Really he was good. Really terrific as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really top-notch audio book.
Mm-hmm. But I was so happy to hear it as audio, really, you know, because then you hear different things that you just maybe didn't notice when you were reading it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was top notch. I could recommend it to anyone.
Yes.
Is that
yes.
Blackstone Audio?
It's Blackstone Audio, right.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, they're so good.
Yeah, they are really good. They are really good. Yeah. As I was listening to this, I was going to say the first time because there's going to be a second time. But as I was listening to this, I thought that it would make a really terrific movie.
I think you're right.
I really do. I think it's a bit deeper. There's a little more going on than a movie like Ghost, mm-hmm. But of course it's a book, not a film. So there's going to be more going on because you're inside your heads. It does everything that a book is good at. Charles DeLint is a very good author, mm-hmm. and but I kept thinking, you know, hey, this would make a good movie, and maybe it'll get made someday.
Oh yeah, it's got all the elements. It's got the fast cars. It's got the beautiful girl with the tattoos, who's super cool, although mm-hmm. she doesn't know it.
Yeah.
And then,
and that's an endearing really quality too. Way. It's an endearing quality she has.
Yeah, exactly. And then you would also have a killer soundtrack.
Yes, you would. And that's a love story. And a love
you
story.
Said that, and I was thinking, oh, I could hear some of this rockabilly mm-hmm. that they keep talking about, these specific songs or whatever.
Right.
But what happens is, because I don't want to get into the spoilers yet, but what happens is that they meet on Halloween evening, and they mm-hmm. fall for each other instantly, which both keep saying is not right, but somehow they can't help it. And they both have unfinished business.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to kind of deal with that and are separated while they're dealing with that unfinished business, I guess you could say. And a lot of what especially Grace is thinking about is faith.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to you after you die? What does it mean to believe in something? What should you believe in?
Mm-hmm.
Which she's never really worried herself about before. And neither is John, really.
Yeah.
Although he doesn't ponder that as much.
Right. He doesn't. Yeah. Until he starts to find out more about her.
Yeah.
And then he delves right in.
Right, right.
Yeah. Which is kind of, it's probably a story that, most of us share.
Right.
You know, we touch someone's life and are introduced to something new, and then we start to realize things that we didn't realize before.
And I think that was one of the themes that I really liked when I was listening again, that I think it hit me the first time, but hit me harder this time, is... John suddenly gets very interested in remodeling car, hot rods, the rockabilly. Just he changes his life around, and his friends start to get worried because they think he's losing himself. And he says, well, no, for the first time in my life, it's like I've really found myself.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, well, but yeah, you're wrapping it all around this girl. And he says, but that's okay. That's what it took for me to find this. And I thought, yeah, that's exactly the way you do when you meet someone like that. Whether you stay with them or not, they expose you to something new.
Right. Yep.
And especially when it's a deep connection, the way that John and Grace have that deep connection. You know, I mean, my husband loves music and listens to all kinds of stuff. He never cared that if it was cool or uncool or whatever. And my family didn't really care about it one way or the other. So I was just a top 40 radio listening person when I met him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even listen to the radio, but there's so much more music in our lives.
Right.
So it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yep. I agree. So I don't think it's a spoiler to sort of talk about the opening scene, which is a real grabber.
Yeah, I know. I wrote to you and went, I forgot how it opened. Okay, it's not all like this.
No. It's
not that you might care. But
no, it's not. It's not graphic. I would call this a PG-13.
Yeah, I think so.
PG-13 novel. It opens with them after Halloween night, or during Halloween night, actually. Mm-hmm. And anyway, they're talking and things, you know, they're in bed, they're talking, and she gets up to go to the bathroom and never comes out. And he's like, what?
Yeah.
Where did she go? He
vanished.
Right. She vanished. And he is convinced that, something really odd was happening there, which it was. Mm-hmm. But his friends, as he explains it to his friends keep telling him, oh, you just fell asleep. You know, even though you didn't think so, you fell asleep and she left.
Right. Because her clothes were gone and they'd been by his bed.
Mm-hmm.
And the window was too small for her to get out of. And he hadn't fallen asleep. We're listening along with him or reading it along with him. And yeah.
And yeah, I was hooked after that first chapter. It was like, oh, this is neat.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes kind of backwards in time, that, you know, flashes back to her life. And then you get to see her life some. And then, you know, I don't know what we're going to consider spoilers here. I'm trying to think on the back. Because we're still in the very first parts of the novel when Grace dies. So I don't think that that's a spoiler because it happens at the very beginning.
Yeah, it's on page 32.
Right. So she's at a convenience store. How she dies, she's at a convenience store and just is there at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, somebody's robbing the store and she trips over something and it looks like she's trying to attack him when what she's trying to do is catch her balance and he shoots her and that's it.
Yeah, and there she goes. But she wakes up somewhere. And this is the other place that we were talking about at the very beginning. Two places. So she wakes up, and this was a fascinating place. I'd love to talk about it. It's she wakes up in the town she's in, or the town she died in. I think she woke up in her apartment. Yeah,
she
woke
wakes up in her own bed.
In her own bed, and she gets up and goes outside and things. And the town. Go ahead.
There's somebody by her bed.
Oh, that's right.
She's like, how
that's
did you get in here?
Yes.
And she says, oh, no, I live here too. And she's like, well, I've never seen you. Her name is Edna. And she says, well, because you're dead. And she's like, what? No, that was a dream. And she's like, well, you can think that if you want.
Right, right.
It doesn't change anything. Mm-hmm. And so she says, forget it. And so she goes outside.
Right. And she's in the town that she died in, but the town that she died in is not altogether there. And it turns out that whenever someone dies, within a certain distance of, I think it was called, her apartment. The place that they died in and they, so the person and the place they died in get transferred to this place.
Yeah.
So,
it's a few square blocks and outside of that is just mist.
Right, just mist. So if the interesting thing is she ended up in her apartment, which was not typical. But the convenience store she died in also appeared. And even if, let's say, there's a guy that's in the library in this town.
Yeah.
And he's really just wishing that someone would die in the library so that the library gets updated. So
yeah, because it's from the 60s or 70s.
Right.
It's like,
oh. And if somebody were to die in the library, the library from that time would appear in this town.
Mm-hmm.
So
it doesn't leave the real world. It's just it manifests in this
exactly,
odd
yeah,
little.
Right.
I don't know what you would call it.
That's
They'd
an
have
important
a name
point.
For it, Star Trek. But I don't have a name for it.
Yeah, some kind of alternate reality. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, the
so
tachyon surge.
Yeah, we're a pocket universe kind
yes,
of thing.
Yes, exactly.
Well, she starts meeting people, and they all have different stories. And what convinces her is she meets Conchita.
Yes, Conchita.
Who she yep. remembers seeing her picture in the paper when she was killed, and she was just 17 or so when she was killed. They become good friends, and Conchita tells her that no one understands why they're there, although Henry at the library is trying to nail this thing down. So he interviews anyone he can who's come through to try and gather information. So that kind of becomes a war room for if you want to give information and try and help figure it out, which she kind of goes in and out of doing. But what she says is, you can go back to the real world twice a year. And that this is tied to Wiccan beliefs, mm-hmm. Which are kind of predominant through a few strains of the book. Which is Beltane, and that's someday in May. I can't remember.
May, it was May 1, yeah.
Okay.
May 1st.
Oh, of course, May Day. Mm-hmm. That's opposite to Halloween, which is the other day you can go through.
Right.
And people will not recognize you who knew you, but
yes.
anybody else will see you as you were.
Right. And that's how she ended up, in the beginning of the book, that's how she ended up meeting John in the first place, because she went back on Halloween.
Right.
Yeah. They mentioned, you know, you mentioned Wiccan, and another thing that's predominant in here is Celtic
yes.
beliefs, because the word thin place is used several times in
yeah.
this book. And I was introduced to the word thin place. I had a friend, you know, I think I mentioned in the last podcast that I kind of had a meandering way back to the Catholic Church.
Oh,
and
right.
one of the stops that I made was the Episcopalian Church.
okay.
I had a really good friend who... an Episcopalian priest. He is now Anglican. He moved to Washington. Well, not anymore as I understand it.
Okay.
There was a
Got
split
it.
In the church, over all these issues. And now there's an Anglican church in the United States.
Okay.
And also an Episcopalian church in the United States. So there's...
Okay. The Episcopalian went more modern with the...
Right.
Beliefs
exactly.
than the Anglican, right? Okay.
Right. And then he
it.
Went Anglican. So they're yeah in communion with the church in England.
Okay.
But anyway, that's the first time I ever heard of the word thin place. And it's from Celtic... It's not Celtic Christianity, although... I don't know how much of an aside we can do here, but one of the things uh-huh. that was neat about this guy, he was always talking about how Christianity was brought to people. And he would uh-huh. always contrast how Christianity was brought to the Irish with how Christianity was brought to the Indians of the United States, or
okay.
North America, I mean.
Uh-huh.
In North America, Christianity was not very successful in being
yeah.
brought to the Native Americans. But it was successful in being brought to Ireland.
Because they adapted it.
That's exactly right. He said that they didn't overrun their traditions, they absorbed their traditions.
Right.
And so the word thin place is a Celtic Christian term, although it came from the original Celtic traditions that weren't
okay.
Christian, before Christianity.
Right, right.
But it's a beautiful idea. It's a thin place is a place where the boundary between heaven and earth is especially thin. So it can be a time, or it can be a spot, or both.
So
yeah.
kind of like the places like Lourdes or Fatima,
exactly,
where
exactly.
there have been apparitions of Mary or
right.
whatever.
Right, so it's a place where you can sense the divine more easily. You know,
oh,
you've
wow.
been in a
so that,
yeah, you've been in a okay. place that you just feel it,
oh,
and that would be a thin place. Yeah.
Okay.
So
all right.
So yeah, so there's the whole Celtic thing going on in this as well.
Well, and I think doesn't Wiccan kind of go back to some of those?
Yeah,
I
guess
really
that it does. I guess
it always
it does.
Kind of felt to me as if it was kind of connected to a lot
yeah,
of those Celtic.
I guess yeah, I've never really equated
kind of,
them as the exact same thing, but
no,
I
no,
know that.
But, kissing cousins, maybe.
Yeah, that would probably be fair.
Kind
yeah.
of thing
mm-hmm.
of, you know, that just the nature worship and love of nature.
Yeah, exactly. I would agree with that. Yeah,
Catholics have too.
Yes, we do.
I just want to say for anybody out there. That's interesting because, because in the book, it's a theme because they go to a party where there are a lot of Wiccan people.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That this one friend, Nina, knows, a friend of John's, and she's into Wicca. And she, in fact, makes some points that I thought were interesting in terms of, she says, "I've always believed in spirits, though I've never seen any of them, but I can feel that the world is a bigger place than what I can see or what we're told it is. And I've always sensed a secret life going on just beyond the one we all know." Mm-hmm. Then, unfortunately, she goes into this thing about, well, organized religion, they think so, they know everything and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. She doesn't really go on too much about it, but she's clearly defending that idea of Wicca against something organized. But what I liked was that kind of states a large theme for the book, that there's something else going on. And all these people are kind of grasping at it from one way or another. They may not be sure exactly what they're grasping at. And from a Catholic point of view, they may or may not have it right. Mm-hmm. I mean, the closest one is Conchita, and she's not close enough exactly, but it's enough that they're trying.
Yeah.
You know, grace meaning God's grace, is cooperating with all these people as long as they're attempting with what knowledge they have in good faith.
Yes. And
from that way, I found it a very Catholic understanding of how God works with everyone if you're being sincere and honest and doing the best you can in accordance with what you know and what you've been taught.
Yeah.
That's not the theme of the book. Maybe it is. I don't know.
Well, yeah, and I should mention that around the time when what's his friend's name again? John's Nina? Friend Nina, right? Mm-hmm. Around the time that Nina was arriving on the scene, I really got a nice appreciation from Charles DeLint of all his characters. Mm-hmm. And I was really connecting with everybody in this book. I mean, mm-hmm. every single person had something to offer.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
So what you're saying there, it does tie into what you're saying there, because, believing that everybody's okay, you just stated what I personally believe, you know, and is a Catholic belief. You know, we shouldn't be running around condemning everybody because they're not believing the same things we are. Everybody's doing everything they can with the stuff that they've got.
Right.
With the information that they have. And this book really does illustrate it all through really fleshed out people, you know.
Right. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say just all of the characters have, like I said, something to offer. And
they believe a lot of different ones. The character who doesn't is the one who's not cooperating. It's the one who's trying to bend it all to their will and do it their own way. And that would be a spoiler, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
We want to go into that or talk about that later. But there's one character who is determined to have their own way, doesn't care about anybody else, is misusing what they do know.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not a likable character.
Right.
Until later.
Yeah. And, there's a lot of argument about, you know, whether truth exists and moral truth and everything like that. But there are things like this that you can say, well, you know, here's one right here. You know, cooperation and... it feels right.
Right.
You know, so it's something that stares you in the face. Yeah. You know, we act this way. Why do we act this way? You know, well, atheists would say, well, we've got this, some kind of an evolutionary reason. You know, they're always coming up with evolutionary reasons, you know, or genetic reasons for people to act the way that they do. You know, we just found the gene that makes me like lasagna or something.
Oh,
you know?
Yes.
And, you know, it's to the point of silly right now in our history.
Well, I don't even necessarily have a problem with that so much as the fact that they're unwilling to look in a broader term because, that's like saying because Charles DeLint wrote this book about this subject that all the words happened to fall into the right order and he didn't have that intention. I don't have a problem with understanding that all that stuff is maybe there, maybe, you know, whether it's for lasagna or to love someone, or that telling stories is a way we all communicate truths to each other. But why wouldn't it be that we're wired that way so we could fully appreciate and communicate with somebody? Yeah. If you're going to create a being to communicate with you, wouldn't you make all the things there so you could communicate with them?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, to me, that just, I don't, it's that thing of you can't separate science and faith. And in fact, there was one scene between Grace and Henry, who's the library guy, who's very factually oriented, which kind of talks about that. And she's telling him, it's toward the end of the book, but it doesn't really spoil anything. She's telling him that where the name of the town came from is from a saint. This is Santo del Vado Viejo, saint of the old fort. And they're talking about San Pedro, which is Saint Peter. And so he listens to this story, and Henry says, well, that's just a folktale. He didn't create a new fort. There's been one here forever. Well, if there has to be a religious connection, you know, kind of thing. And she says, so you accept magic and witchcraft, but not folktales? And he says, just because one impossible thing is true, he begins, that doesn't mean every, we're dead, aren't we? I say, breaking in with Conchita's argument to me earlier. But here we are all the same. And it's like, you're there. You're dead, but you're alive. You're trying to figure this out, and you still want to argue about, oh, well, if it's religious, I'm not going to believe it. And that was, to me, that was the final character that was needed, was the complete rationalist in the middle of something miraculous.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That's neat.
Because I was like, because that's somebody who is missing something that he's experiencing. It's right in front of him, and he won't open his eyes and admit it because it doesn't go with his preconceptions. And if I had done that, I wouldn't be here right now, and I would be a much poorer person for it.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Would you want to go into spoilers?
Well,
now?
We can. I just wanted to mention one more thing.
Okay.
At this point in the story, I was listening to the audiobook, like I said, and then my daughter and I, my 10-year-old daughter and I, were driving somewhere. So I stopped it, and she said, so what are you listening to? And I said, well, a book called Mystery of Grace, and I explained it to her up to this point. And then through the explaining it, okay, so where we're at is the Grace has disappeared. John is wondering where she went, and Grace is in this town.
Alverson Arms World.
Alverson Arms World, right. So I was thinking, okay, well, what's going to happen next? And I thought, okay, well, what's going to happen next is he is going to find out that she's dead. Okay. And I figured, okay, so that's going to be pretty much the rest of the book is, you know, he's going to find out that she's dead, and it's going to be an amazing reveal. And, you know, so I thought, okay, I got the rest of this book figured out. Now, to Charles DeLint's credit, that did happen. But it was like within the next 10 pages.
Yeah, it was so early.
It was just like, boom, okay, now, you know, so everything that I thought was going to happen did happen, but it wasn't the story. It was just like, okay, boom, he's going to find out that she's dead.
Yeah.
And that's what he does find out. So I guess now we can go ahead and go into spoiler territory. So if folks want to read this book, go ahead and hit pause and go read it.
Yeah, right. It's yeah. I think you'd enjoy it even if you listen to the spoilers,
but
it's just much more enjoyable if you let it unfold for yourself.
Right, right.
Because the thing I wanted to say was the Bruja. There's the whole reason that this world exists is that there is a witch who has taken over the top floor of the Alverson Arms, and she's one of the descendants of the Alversons, which is the apartment building, I forgot to say. And her son died in, was it Vietnam?
Yeah, I think it was.
And yeah, she was keeping everything just the same because she knew he'd come home to her. And she was all locked up there. She had a way to conceal it from modern eyes. And in fact, you couldn't get in if you were in the spirit world. So Conchita and Grace have to go to a great deal of trouble to go through to the real world. And right before sunrise, which is when they are automatically sent back to the Alverson Arms world, get inside that apartment so they transfer back inside at that time, if that makes sense. And then they discover this old lady who's got unbelievable powers. She can twitch her fingers at them and send them right through the door, and they can't get back through again.
Yeah.
So they're able to find out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then Henry helps uncover the rest.
Right. Yeah, and the whole discovery process is really interesting. Again, credit to Charles DeLint.
Mm-hmm. You're absorbed the whole time.
Yeah, you really are. And, they go through a lot of theories. You know, well, is this limbo? You know, mm-hmm. It's interesting as they explore that. And
Purgatory,
right. Exactly. Yeah, they're all really interesting things that, you know, they go through to try to find out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, too, twice a year, she's going back. Grace is going back. And John has figured out enough stuff within the 6 months, you know, she was there on Halloween. And 6 months later, he's out there waiting at the convenience store for her to reappear on May 1st.
Yeah.
And so he's figured out enough by that time. So they're meeting each other at that time. And one of the interesting things to me was John saying, well, what if I killed myself so that we could both be together all year? And she was horrified by that idea. And really, you know, I don't know that he was ever seriously thinking about it, but it did come up.
Yeah, he just kind of was floating, maybe there's a way I could be with you. She's like, do not even think about that.
Mm-hmm.
This is real life, live it, and nothing is as real there. You don't feel as much, you don't need to eat or anything, and and sleeping is kind of horrible, and so don't.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, and that was an interesting discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah, because things are different where they're at. I mean, it's not like the same as being alive. You know, she doesn't feel things. She doesn't taste things. But when she goes back to the real world, when she visits the real world, she feels everything intensely.
Yeah.
And it's probably because everything's been dulled, and then she's let free. And then just for that, you know, it's not only 20, it's not even 24 hours. It's from, moonrise to sunrise?
Something like that,
yeah. So
12 hours.
Yeah, so. The moon may come up. Yeah, well, the moon could come up at any time of the day, but the moon may come up, you know, and give her only 4 hours at night or something, you know, if it was coming up at night. But
now I lost my train of thought on all that.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of what they find out, since we're in spoiler territory, is that basically this old lady is feeding off the minds of everybody there. And there are all these people, or a number of people, who've decided they're just not going to deal with it anymore. So they go to sleep forever, basically. Mm-hmm. We call them sleepers. And one of them wakes up at one point and says, we're in her mind. So that's the clue to that thing. And so when they're talking about it being purgatory, that's when I was thinking, well, then those sleepers wouldn't be there, or something else would be going on with them, because they're not experiencing anything of what purgatory is supposed to be. And I just thought maybe I'd mention that, and this is extreme layman's terms, so please correct me, but basically purgatory is the place, I think of it kind of like, it's kind of like a clean shower. You know, you're all dirty, you've done the best you could, but you've been working on that car or whatever, and you couldn't get everything off of soap and water, so you go into this extreme shower and get super squeaky clean, because nothing can be allowed near God but perfection, because that's just God's nature.
Right.
And so this is just, it's just getting rid of all that extra stuff from life that wasn't right, and making you the supreme person that you were supposed to be always.
Right. Yeah.
And letting, you know, basically that's when you get to go to heaven to be with God. And so looking at it from that point of view, there's a lot of touchings on those kind of ideas.
Yeah. And it's Catholic thinking. Yeah, I looked up in the catechism. Some of the stuff about life everlasting.
Yeah.
And it says, you know, this isn't a verse. What do you call it? It's 1023. Is that a...
Oh, yeah, it's just a numbering of how you can find stuff.
1023 is where I'm at.
Okay.
On heaven. And it says, those who die in God's grace and friendship are perfectly purified... Oh, sorry. Those who die in God's grace and friendship and are perfectly purified live forever with Christ. They are like God forever, for they see him as he is face to face. So purgatory is where that purification happens, because none of us die in a perfectly purified state.
Unless you're a saint, and then I guess you're given the grace to, you know, like instant purification, and you just hop right over purgatory.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of people who are saints, by the way, who the church doesn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
The church doesn't say they know every saint. The people who are the saints are not the people who the church has declared to be saints. They're the people who the church says, hey, we have seen so much proof that we've discovered this person must be a saint.
Yeah, yeah.
And Conchita talks a lot about Los Santos, the saints,
mm-hmm.
because she has just enough knowledge to rest everything, all her faith and her belief on the saints and Our Lady, who, any non-Catholics, that's Virgin Mary, are going to help you get through. And she says they work basically because of your faith, if you have faith in them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of thing that Grace starts to connect with a little, because her father, grandfather was angry with the church or something because he'd never talk about it. Her mother went completely the wrong other direction, which was if the Pope hadn't said it was good, then it was bad. She says that several times, that, you know, no Halloween because of this. And she talks a lot about that very rigid attitude. And the thing that I thought was interesting is at one point she gets a lot closer to the real understanding of it, is that as for me, I don't know anything about any of this, that Los Santos have magic, not just our prayers, that a bruja, a witch, can leave her mark so strongly on the world that her handiwork reaches past death. And then she says the reason that it all works is because it brings her closer to God. It opens up the way to God. And that's really what's true.
Right. Yeah. I was struck by that too.
Which, and that was when it struck me about, you know, the fact that all these people have an incomplete understanding, they're doing the best they can in good faith. And that is rewarded, essentially. Mm-hmm. But the more you think about it and the closer to understanding you come, the more it's beneficial to you yourself, which is the point anyway of all of it, is God doesn't want you to have to do anything but come straight to him when you die. I mean, but you wouldn't understand him perfectly if you weren't the way you should be, just like all these people. They'd have an incomplete understanding. And it made me think about the difference between sacramentals, which is how these things are being used, and the sacraments. Because sacramentals are things that bring you closer to God somehow, or help you connect, like a painting of a saint, a statue, a cross, a scapular, that sort of thing. But the sacraments, and there are seven, actually have power in and of themselves. They're bestowed by God.
Right.
That's baptism, reconciliation or confession, marriage, which is the only sacrament that people bestow on each other. It's not bestowed by the priest. Confirmation, holy orders, the anointing of the sick. And the funny thing is, I couldn't think of the seventh one last night. And my husband looks him up and he just starts laughing. He goes, I can't believe you didn't think of this. The Eucharist. I'm like, oh, right. I'm like, because that's not something you do.
Right, right.
So those things actually have their own power.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that Charles DeLint is talking about this makes me think of Flicks That Church Forgot, Peter Law's podcast. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever listened.
He's I've heard it.
A British Baptist minister who loves horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about this one time in terms of The Stand being, or not The Stand, Salem's Lot, being the first movie he could remember that, and the book did this too, that said, oh, if you don't have faith in that cross, it's not going to work on the vampire. So when the dissolute priest first meets the vampire, he has true faith, and the cross blazes and burns the vampire with its light and fire and everything. But the second time, he's feeling pretty bad about himself because I think he's an alcoholic and whatever else. And so he really doesn't have that faith, and nothing happens. Right. And I was like, that's like a lot of what's being talked about in this book, because it's not – well, the cross would be a sacramental anyway.
Yeah, sure.
So it doesn't have any power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I thought that was just kind of an interesting thing it made me think of. So
yeah,
I just took a side trip to talk about it. Sorry.
No, that's fine. You know, this book obviously makes me think of the afterlife, which I don't know if it'll be surprising to people or not, but I don't think about that very often. And I think a lot of people believe that, well, the only reason people are Christians is because they need an afterlife belief. But it's not something that I honestly think about very much. But it, I started to think, you know, living in a Mormon community like that I do, the Mormons have very specific views on afterlife. I mean, it's very detailed. You know, and the Catholic view is kind of nebulous, meaning we don't know exactly, you know, what it's going to be like. All we know is that we're going to be with Christ.
Right.
You know, that's what heaven is. In fact, the next line in the catechism, it's 1025. It says to live in heaven is to be with Christ. Actually, let me back up one more. 1025, that's the definition of heaven. It says, this perfect life with the Most Holy Trinity, the communion of life and love with the Trinity, with the Virgin Mary, the angels, and all the blessed, is called heaven. So, we don't have a specific view, you know, like, you know, there's going to be houses and we're going to, you know, live in a house or anything like that. But other religions often have a more complete picture of what you're striving for in that. But I think, you know, and in this book too, there it is at the end, it's nebulous.
I loved.
Which I did love too, because
it's person that they loved most.
Right. And I think priests get asked all the time, you know, will my dog be in heaven or something like that? Yeah. But again, you know, the answer is always, well, if you need your dog to have perfect happiness, then that's what's going to be there. You know, so that's the answer I've heard most often. And it's because, you know, we don't know for sure exactly what it's going to be like. But if you need that dog for happiness, then you'll have it because we know that that's what it is.
Yeah. Well, and the answer that I thought I liked that Peter Kraft gave, and I love his stuff because he is a philosopher and he's a convert. So he looks at everything kind of anew, but very much in line with the church teachings. But he says, well, you know, no one's saying here you can't have your dog with you. He goes, but that's not going to be that important. But for people who need to think that now, he goes, here's the thing. He goes, it's going to be a new heaven and a new earth. That's the one thing we know. We don't know what it'll be like. We know it's going to be better than anything we can imagine because we just don't know.
Right.
Which is the thing I liked about this book is everybody was, are you afraid or are you ready? Because we have no idea what's on the other side of that mist. It's that leap of faith thing. But he says, because it's a new heaven and a new earth, why wouldn't a new earth have animals? God put all these animals here with us now to help us find him.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of being out in nature and looking at all that animal life and everything else. He says, why wouldn't that be part of what's there to prepare us for what it'll be like? And he goes, and if that's the case, and we know that dogs and cats have souls, just not like ours, he goes, why wouldn't he use them to populate it with? He goes, who says they won't? The church doesn't say that. The church just says that's not a detail that we're worried about.
Yeah, right.
Which is why people have arguments. And I'm like, to me, that's the best answer. Think what you want because it's going to be so different. It's like such a cliche, but to say, you know, the baby in the womb, yeah, it's painful. They don't want to come out, but they couldn't imagine like sitting here talking with each other about this.
Yeah.
Or going outside and hearing the birds and everything. Well, it's going to be that different for us.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So,
that's what I liked about that mist thing is when they finally do go into it, there's just a tiny hint and you want to know what happens, but you can't.
Yeah, because, and that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a major spoiler, you know, but I do really want to talk about it because in literature, the ambiguousness is something that I've grown to appreciate. Mm-hmm. What happens is John actually does die in a car accident.
He keeps saying, I won't see her again until I die. And everyone's like, oh no, next Halloween. And then he dies.
Yes. And then he dies. He does die. And, you know, the first thought that I had was, well, did he commit suicide? You know,
I
was concerned about that because I didn't like that idea. And I'm glad that's not what happened. It's not what appears to happen because Grace meets, when she comes back the next time, she meets another ghost who said, oh, I saw that accident because I've been, you know, he was a photographer who fell.
Yeah.
But the thing is, John did not die within a certain distance from that apartment building. So he went on to where he was supposed to go. He bypassed this witch's limbo or whatever you want to call it. So, but the ghost mentioned to her that he saw him come out of the wreckage with a big smile on his face and he walked down the road and disappeared. Mm-hmm. So he was obviously anticipating, hey, you know, I died and that's okay with me because I get to see all these other people.
I could be with Grace again.
I can be with Grace, exactly. So, but Grace, it makes her redouble her efforts to find out what's going on and to end what's going on so she can move on.
Right.
And the book is ambiguous because we never see them reunited. We want them to be reunited. We want that payback.
Yeah.
But yet, I appreciate the ambiguousness of the book, not only because I think, to me, it fits more of what, by not getting to see what heaven is like, it fits more into my belief system. You know, I don't want to see what heaven is like because anything you come up with is not going to be as good as it can be.
Well, I agree. And I tend to think about, it's funny, I don't worry about the afterlife. I really trust, this is going to sound so crazy to some people, but everybody else will get it. I really trust Jesus for that. I really trust that he's going to be there grabbing my hand. I worry about the moment of death.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like everybody, I'm like, I just don't want it to be awful. But, I can't help that. I can't control it. I have to trust that it will be what it will be. And I can be kind of like that story. And that, I think I might have put that in my book because it impressed me powerfully of a patient who's asking the doctor, like, what will it be like after you die? And he says, well, I don't have any idea. And he says, well, then how can you trust? And he says, well, just a minute. And he goes, can you hear, you know, and like his dog is pawing on the door to come. And he opens the door and his dog goes, master. And he says, just like my dog. He had no idea what was on the other side of the door, but he knew I was here.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, that's what it's like. I have no idea.
Yep.
It's on the other side of that door, but my master's there and I love him more than anything. And so I think I don't worry about what's there later because I trust that everything we can think of that sounds boring or stupid or too much like this life or like things that are made up is wrong.
Yeah.
Because stupid.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the things that draws me to the Catholic Church is that there are mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of them. I mean, this is not a complete explanation of what's going to happen. The Catholic Church does not offer a complete explanation. But there are mysteries. And the thing is that there should be mysteries because how could we possibly understand everything? I mean, if we did, we'd be God, right?
Right.
So there has to be mysteries. And a tradition that doesn't have mysteries is one that should be questioned, in my opinion.
Amen.
Yeah.
Well, and that's kind of why, you know, I think a lot of times people look at the Catholic Church from the outside or maybe even from the inside and say, well, it's so complicated and all these various, ways to pray and the things with the saints and this and that. And I think what gets misunderstood is what the church kind of does in a lot of these cases is all those are legitimate ways, if they're used in proper perspective, to help you connect with the fact that you want to get to that place that we don't understand what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But we know our master's there, who we love more than anything. But you don't have to do all that stuff. There's only a few key things you really have to believe, and then you have to go along with, you know, there's the Ten Commandments stuff and, you know, that kind of thing. It's perfectly okay not to say the rosary ever. It's perfectly okay not to care about the saints. Now, they'll help you if you're interested and if that's a route for you.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I think this book kind of talks about that. You know, it's like it's a big tent. And this book kind of looks at a lot of different ways of believing and dealing with how do you understand mysteries and the afterlife. Do you want to try and kind of be like Darth Vader. You know, the tighter you hold your hand, the more star systems slip between your fingers. That's the Bruja.
Yeah.
She's trying to hold it so tightly to what she thinks should happen after her son dies, and what Grace, purely through trying to achieve her own ends, winds up telling her is that, no, you've misunderstood the whole thing. He's been waiting for you. Mm-hmm. Where are you? You're holding things in stasis.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing I loved is the kind of that natural understanding that this world wasn't right, that the family who's in the car crash has.
Yes.
Because the baby's so unhappy. The baby won't stop crying.
Mm.
And the baby's the most pure spirit there.
Yeah, that's right. You know? I knew, yeah. No, you explained it perfectly because I was trying to explain that to myself. But yeah, it was the babies that can't handle it. I mean, they just need to move on.
Yeah. There's life or there's whatever comes next, but there's not this stasis area.
Yeah.
And the fact that everybody, once the Bruja says, okay, if you want to leave, I'm going to let you leave. You can go this way. And everybody very gradually has to think about it some or whatever, but they all go.
Right. Grace, in saintly fashion,
mm-hmm.
stays. Because she knows that the moment she goes, that door's going to be closed. So she hangs out, and as people die, she explains to them what's going on and moves them on as fast as she can.
Mm-hmm.
But she herself withholds her own happiness for that reason.
Well, and also in the ways of grace, meaning big G God kind of grace, mm-hmm. is the people that she's close to, which is in this case one person actually, Conchita, helps her to understand where she's going wrong so she can move along. She's told by that old lady, you're afraid of what you'll find or not find on the other side. And so she takes that to Conchita, who's her best friend, the sister that she never had, and says it, and Conchita's recognized it. Conchita's been waiting for her to figure this out so she can go on, because they'll go together.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I thought that was a really beautiful expression of how friendship and love is used to help us progress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't have to be necessarily Catholic. It's used all the time through life to help us with each other. That's the human way.
Yeah, it sure is.
Kind of made that way. The other thing I liked and I have to say, Charles DeLint, I take my hat off to you. A lot of people writing about this kind of stuff, even Los Santos, the Saints and Martyrs and all that kind of thing, would not have gone here and said this thing when she realizes that what gives her power over the Bruja so that they can even make a deal to let people out is her willingness to give her own blood and sacrifice herself for all those people.
Yeah.
And so she has made crosses all over this lady's door that brought her out, and the Bruja starts using her power and saying, you can't do anything. And she says, oh, really? So she uses an X-Acto knife, gets blood all over her hands, and starts making crosses of blood on top of the crosses on the door. And then she says, and it starts working. It's cutting the doorway. It really is all about the blood, I realize. My head filling with a wave of understanding that seems to come from somewhere outside of me. Blood. The blood of saints and martyrs. The blood of Christ. The literal blood that sustains our lives and the blood of the Lamb that sustains our souls. I'm not saying I'm a saint or martyr, but like anybody else, I've got blood. And no matter what a person believes or doesn't believe, that blood is sacred. It's what keeps us alive. It's the gateway to life and connects us to every living thing, to the seas and the land, to the whole damn planet, which is another way of saying that it connects us to God.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So, yep.
Yeah. And I read that and I was like, oh, I take my hat off to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's a definite statement that is something for everybody to kind of chew on who doesn't really already kind of connect to that sacrifice and what blood really means and giving of yourself so much that you're willing to disregard anything about yourself for the love of the people around you.
Right. Bravo.
And that's Easter.
That is. It sure is.
That's, yeah. Well, of course, the resurrection, that's the passion. And then Easter is the ultimate reward, because I remember our priest saying, he goes, you know, everybody likes to connect it to the sacrifice and this and that. And he goes, but if you read the texts, if you go back and read like from Easter, what's the theme? The theme is not the sacrifice, although that's the huge thing. It's the obedience. It's the obedience that Christ, of course, because he was God and man, knew what his sacrifice would do.
Right.
Still horribly hard because, of course, gosh, what he went through, it would be. But for us, it's the obedience.
Yeah,
even if we don't understand what we're called to do or the sacrifice that seems to be necessary, we have to trust that it will be used somehow, even if we can't see it.
Right. And that brings us right back to Mary.
Right.
Because,
she
did the same thing.
Yeah. Our Lady of, I don't know what Alta Gracia stands for, but grace, Our Lady of Grace. And that's the thing with Mary is she's so misunderstood sometimes is she's not there to be venerated on her own ever. And if that ever comes up, that's a false manifestation or understanding. She is there only to show us her son. She is the first and ultimate saint because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's that she didn't understand, but she said, you know what? I am your servant. I'll do it. I'll just trust.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Believe and do the best I can. And so, yeah.
Yep. Amazing stuff.
Yeah. And a really great story. My mom found this book when it came out. This book is from 2009. And I guess that might be the year my dad died, but I think she read it before then because she wasn't connecting any of this stuff. Still very much atheist.
Uh-huh.
And speaking of, it's funny because this book uses death and thinking about the afterlife to bring everybody connected with it to some degree or other to a greater understanding of the mysteries around us.
Mm-hmm.
And in my family, I couldn't possibly go into the details. It would sound like one of these books, but we saw stuff that was crazy. And it was because that mattered that much, people's souls. And that's what now my mom, she's not an atheist anymore. She's not Catholic or really even a church going person, but she definitely knows there's God and Christ and all that. She's into it.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And my father died, saying there is life after death and I'm going to be waiting for you.
Hmm.
That was a true deathbed conversion. It was crazy. But so it's, and I've heard other people talk about things like that too, because I guess it's that ultimate moment, it's right there before you and you can't put it off. And it's thought of kind of like you say, people think of Christianity sometimes as, oh, you're leaning on the afterlife. It's thought of as that weak thing.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, it's not. You have to bend your mind around something bigger than you at that point. Whether it's the going, I'm not going to fight it anymore. I'm going to look at what's right in front of me and deal with it and not put it off, which is what I think, that was what my dad was dealing with.
Yeah.
Look at Grace and John. John had never thought about it before ever. But because of Grace in the book, he has an idea that there's something good that our souls go on. He says that.
Yes, he does. Yep.
And everybody who knew John knows that.
Yeah, he allowed his life to change because of that knowledge too.
Right.
Yeah, which is another part of it all. Yep.
Yeah, he opened himself up to things he would never have considered before.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, which kind of goes back to Stranger Than Fiction, where he went and got the guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Been afraid to have the guitar lessons, that's that kind of thing.
That's right. That's true.
Went and told the girl, I want you. I don't know what else to do, but I'm just saying, I don't want to waste my life anymore. I want to live it fully.
Yeah, exactly.
In whatever way that means. And Grace then, of course, wound up, having to work through her stuff and do the same thing on a more complicated level. But, death is that great leveler.
Yeah.
If you have the chance to find yourself face to face to it, I think it changes you like falling in love or something. It's that new reality that you see. And that's, he used this book beautifully to talk about that.
Yeah, he sure did. Yeah, he sure did.
And he doesn't come down to you, for anybody listening who's not Christian, he doesn't use that to say there's one way to believe.
Yeah, and I don't
as we mentioned,
know that Charles DeLint is Christian anyway.
No.
I should have looked him up and learned a little bit more about him personally, but this is not a book that's promoting Christianity, I wouldn't say. But it's promoting, like you said, the mystery of everything, which does fit into a Catholic framework.
Mm-hmm. And that there's something that goes on after. I mean, he's definitely talking about the fact that there's something that we can't see, and it's not the his little Manitous and gods and things of his other stories. This one's deeper. And I thought it was interesting when I was looking on Amazon at the different reviews, some people unqualified loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And other people said, "Eh, it's not as good as his other books. It's a little nebulous. It's, you know," and I was mm-hmm. like, right, that's the point in a way.
Yeah, right.
He ties all this around that, but he can't answer that question. He's super honest in that. And I think all the people in the book are really honest, and that's why they're so easy and likable to connect to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God will use what's around to get your attention, and, you know, he's not going to force himself on you. He'll lead you gently, and wherever you get to is up to you
mm-hmm.
and his grace,
right?
Which will yep. kind of help soften your heart, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
I guess that doesn't probably make sense to anybody who hasn't been through it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is like falling in love. That's the best analogy I can use.
I don't disagree with that at all. No.
Yeah.
That's good.
Before you fall in love, you understand the big symbols
mm-hmm.
and that it's so wonderful. And once you do, and you're on the other side and living with a person who you're having to adapt to and work the little things of life around so that the big things are still there, that's when you understand what real life and real love really is. And mm-hmm. that's like going through the, oh my gosh, there is a God. Oh my gosh. Now here I am in real life. How do I do this?
Right. Right.
There's still mystery.
And there is. And the opening up and allowing it to change things is also, you know, just like what Mary did. You know, mm-hmm. We all have mm-hmm. little moments like that, you know, nothing on her magnitude, of course, but, you know, she's an example of, you know, saying yes. And mm-hmm. like in my own path, you know, just flitting around and zooming around what was obvious and looking into all these other things while the obvious is right there all the time. Well, at some moment you have to say yes, and then you can move on from there, but it won't let you move on until you do. It's a blockage or whatever that needs to be, released or, you know, needs to be gotten rid of.
Yeah. It's like the rocks in the river that kind of won't let everything flow the way it should or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's hard to find words for it because these are things that we don't really have the vocabulary for. And that's the other thing about having to tell through stories. That's why it's mm-hmm. so great that you can look at all the different levels of this and see.
For sure.
Yeah.
So another good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it.
Reviews, so.
Oh boy. Yeah. And I think it wouldn't surprise, I haven't looked at those reviews, but it wouldn't surprise me that the ambiguity near the end where you didn't have the payoff of the scene where they're reunited, mm-hmm. which is what a person, I could understand that a person would want that out of a story. Mm-hmm. But,
he does hint at it, but the
ambiguity, I think, is, like I said, I've learned to appreciate it through, you know, a lot of the books we've read on SFF audio and things. Ambiguity, there's a place for it in literature, and this was a perfect use of it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And, the one last thing I wanted to say is that thinking of that ambiguity of what it's like. Mm-hmm. That's always what we focus on if we want to know what's heaven like, or that sounds boring.
Mm-hmm.
But the people in this book were all focused on who they'd find there. It was the people that mattered, not what it looked like.
Mm-hmm.
Conchita wanted to find her grandmother, even when Grace is going through and she thinks she could almost hear an engine through the mist, but she's thinking, oh, maybe Abuelo is there and my mother and, you know, her mother and, you know, all these people that she's like, and now we can get along and now we can love each other. Well, what could be more heavenly than that? Who cares what it looks like?
Yeah. Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's really the perfect image of heaven there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and maybe that ambiguity is what helps leave it open. I'm thinking of Anne as a man and his,
That's feedback, right.
Which I guess because we're kind of almost done with the story, I don't cut things off, but that's kind of feeds into him talking about our last episode.
Yeah. He gave us a really nice post on his website, Anne as a Man. And Anne as a Man, by the way, I'll put the link on the show notes or whatever you call them.
Mm-hmm.
It's Anne as a Man. blogspot.com, and he reviews podcasts. So if you want to find a place where you can find anything you're looking for in the podcast world, this is the site to go to.
Especially if you like nonfiction, history, things like that. He tends to specialize more in that.
But right, right.
Yeah, I love his site, and I love Anne, even though he and I will clash occasionally over, you know, oh, you're reading Genesis. You pronounce these Hebrew things all wrong. And I'm like, I can't help it. I'm a stupid American. Hang on. I don't speak five languages.
Oh, yeah.
And he's amazing. He speaks five languages and very fluently in English, for sure. Mm-hmm. Lives in Israel. Dutch, I believe. Or,
right,
know,
I think that's right. Yeah.
Holland.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
a great guy to talk to.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So he discussed our podcast episode on Stranger Than Fiction, just a short post there. And he said it was fun to have the film discussed and learn more of the details, which was neat, you know, and the whole thing is neat. And he just says,
breaking up on my side. Sorry.
Oh, okay. That's okay. And he says, I'm not sure I will agree with Scott and Julie's take on the story. I can understand how they can see Christ when they meet a person sacrificing his life in a story, but that could be a stretch. When they discuss the peculiar role of Harold's watch and claim to see how God works in one's life, I don't even know what they mean. Is that God in the details, or is that God's master plan being carried out by seemingly trivial circumstances? That is when I find their perspective being forced upon the story and upon an otherwise and very captivating and entertaining discussion. So, I know that you and I have both worried about, you know, forcing meaning on the stories, but what we're doing, I think we're pretty clear that what we're doing is we're finding, well, the podcast tag is, you know, we're finding traces of the one reality. You know, as Catholics, when we read books and things, it triggers things in our heads where, oh, this reminds me of this and this connects with that. And that's really what we're doing. You know, we're not saying that Charles de Lint wrote a Catholic book.
No.
And I think we were clear at the beginning, you know, Charles de Lint is not a Catholic Christian. I don't know if he's Christian anyways, but,
yeah. And that really doesn't matter to us.
It makes no difference
no matter what,
because there is one reality. That. It's something that we all share, and,
right.
Catholicism, you know, touches all this stuff. And as Catholics, when we read it, that's what we think about when we're reading it. And this is, you know, so that's what we're doing. We're not trying to say that, you know, Stranger Than Fiction is a Catholic movie anyway. It's just, this is how it strikes us. So,
and I would think it's fair to say though, if it strikes both of us that way, and we have, I'm quite often surprised by, like, you know, things that Scott will notice and things like that, that there at least is something there that's echoing out at more than one person.
Yeah. And I know there's a whole school of thought in literature too, that, hey, what it means to you is what it means, because the author is trying to communicate his or her, you know, they may or may not have a specific agenda, but usually people who have a specific agenda write terrible books. So, you know, so what happens is that their subconscious works throughout. And things peek out all the time, and that's what the one reality is. You know, you can call it the collective conscious or whatever, but there's things that we all share.
Right.
And Catholicism is big. Like you said, it's a big tent.
Yeah, they've covered a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and in fact, that makes me think of T.S. Eliot, who our priest loves to quote him in scripture study, believe it or not, but he wrote, you know, some super complicated poetry, and a lot of it had very Catholic imagery. And people say, oh, my gosh, when you say this thing in this poem, this is what was there. I loved it. And he would just kind of smile and say, oh, is that what you saw? Good.
Mm-hmm.
He would neither confirm nor deny. He just kind of would put it out there. And that's what Flannery O'Connor would say, too. She would always write her stories very much as a Catholic person, but that wouldn't be at all what the story would be about to most people, and because they were crazy.
Yeah, I think one of the quotes on your site said something about that she wasn't writing for Catholics.
Right.
So she wasn't trying to write, you know, quote-unquote Catholic fiction.
No.
It's just that that's what she was. That's what she is,
right.
And it came out. And,
right.
You know, in writing classes I've taken and stuff, that, you know, they're always very careful to say, you know, what you are is going to come out. Mm-hmm. So don't worry about it so much. You know, beginning writers are always like, well, this is going to be my Christ figure, and this is going to be this. And, you know, if you write like that, it doesn't work out very well.
No,
you know,
that's
because
why
people
a lot
can
of...
see the pieces, you know.
Oh, yes, that's why when you see something labeled Christian movie or Christian fiction, you know, I mean, no disrespect to the people who've managed to pull that off, but so many have not, because it's just like hitting a hammer on a nail.
Mm-hmm.
And you just go, oh, how about just doing a decent movie and a decent story and let me take it from there?
Right.
Because God doesn't work that way. Well, he does sometimes. Really, you know, that nail's got to go in.
Right.
Or the house will fall down. But, you know.
Yeah. So as far as seeing God in the
thing, I don't even remember what we said. I'll have to listen.
Yeah, I don't remember what we specifically said either. But the watch to me would be an example of, you know, sometimes it's amazing how things work out, and it's amazing how something is exactly where it should be at the time that it is. And that could be a person or a thing or whatever. So I guess the watch, you know, could be an example of God in the details. Now, in that movie, the watch was really a character in that movie.
Yeah.
So it was implied that, you know, it had a life of its own, and it was consciously trying to do that stuff. So,
the director said Harold couldn't die because he thought he was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
The watch had to die because it didn't think it would die.
Right.
So therefore he's almost like an unwitting sacrifice used to save Harold for other things. Now, does God do that? I'm not going to even get into that because that's too much for my little brain. As far as the Christ stuff in there, the only thing I would say is the use of Son of Man. We never did define the fact that that is one of the titles that Christ called himself all the time.
Right, right.
So when we kept saying that about that picture, and when I went and looked back at what Magritte said about the Son of Man, the picture, I was like, oh, it was that what's on the surface is not really real. You have to look at things from a different angle. And that apple in front of that guy's face, and the fact that one elbow seemed to bend backwards instead of the right angle, was to make you re-examine everything. And so I was like, I don't know. I see some sort of connection there. But
right.
Not everybody has to see that, because that's the great thing. It's a great book, just like The Mystery of Grace. Great story.
Yeah. It sure is. You bet.
Yeah.
So thank you very much, Anne. You know, I appreciate him mentioning us on his site.
I appreciate you listening.
Yeah, that was really great.
What with the theme.
Yeah.
But with our stated theme of being Catholics talking about it, because I just know that's not your thing. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
We got another piece of feedback from, I'm not sure how to say the last name, so I'll just take a dash at it. Susan Vigilante. I think. And she is an author of a book I need to review on my blog, called Breakfast with the Pope.
Oh.
And that's part of her faith journey. It's a great story. And she actually had breakfast with John Paul II more than once.
Oh, cool.
I know. And anyway, she stunned me because I knew she sent me the review copy, but I didn't realize she was any more involved than that. And she sent me an email that said, by the way, every Lent I give up listening to talk radio. Harder than it sounds. Yesterday, while doing housework, I listened to a whole string of your podcasts. I should give up talk radio more often. Life gets a lot more interesting, which I loved that.
Yeah, that's great.
I especially liked the Quiz Show podcast. Very interesting analysis of one of my favorite movies. All this is to say your podcast helped me not break my Lenten vow and go tearing for the radio while I sorted laundry. So besides being entertaining, you've done a spiritual work of mercy. Thanks. And wow. I can use those pointers for spiritual works of mercy. So thank you.
Well, that's great. Wow. That makes me feel great.
Yeah, I know. Wasn't that nice?
That was nice. Yep.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So thank you.
All right. Yes. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
All right. So what have we got next?
Let's see. Next is your baby choice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Fallen. Right. Yep. So a little bit of demons and stuff in there. So that'll be fun to talk about. And then after that, we've got Stories of Your Life and Others by Ted Chiang. Eager to talk about that. They just released the Hugo nominations.
Oh.
Or announced the Hugo nominations.
Okay.
And he is nominated yet again. This time for The Life Cycle of Software Objects, which is a novella that he's got out.
I was just looking at that on Amazon because mm-hmm. I was looking at, I might have said, this is my chance to buy that book, that Ted Chiang book, A Good Excuse. Uh-huh. And yeah. I said, oh, what's this? And I saw it looks very interesting. And people have said it's kind of different from what he's written before because it's longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's brilliant, though.
He sure is.
He's brilliant.
Yep.
My gosh.
And then after I'm sorry. Okay.
No, go ahead.
After that, we're doing a movie called About a Boy.
Yeah.
Which is from a story written by Nick Hornby, I think. That's.
Yeah. And it's Hugh Grant. And it's a lot of people won't like Hugh Grant, but he, in this movie, is the perfect person. My husband looks at this and says, he thinks it's a story about his life.
That's
so
great.
Let's just say it starts off with a super shallow guy. No offense to you. I'm sure you're not listening, but Hugh Grant, but if you are, I like you just fine. Mm. But that's just to say how well he does the movie. And then I just picked out the next book because it's not a book that is current. And I think it might be in publication. It's from the 50s. Mm-hmm. It's historical fiction, and it's called The Prince of Foxes, and it's by Samuel Shellabarger, who's one of my favorite historical fiction authors,
neat.
Because his stuff is super accurate.
Great.
As well as being just swashbuckling, wonderful stories. So.
Oh, fantastic. Great. Yeah. Well, good. I'm looking forward to all of that.
Yeah, so, me too. Yeah.
Fantastic. We've got 8 weeks planned out there.
I know. Yeah, so everybody's got plenty of a chance to stay ahead. All if right. That's what they want to do.
You bet.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Julie. And
yeah,
thanks,
thank
everybody,
you.
For listening. And happy
yes.
Easter to everybody.
Happy Easter. And we've got however many more days. It's 40 days long, right?
Yep.
Or 50 to mm-hmm. Pentecost.
Right.
So celebrate.
Yes. Enjoy.
No Friday penance. Yay.
And there was much rejoicing.
Because I am focused on what I can define. I can't help it.
I love it. All right. We'll see y'all, everybody.
Have a great couple weeks, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.